Okay, that's very interesting. Okay. So 3 or 4 months ago, I mentioned that I had an experience of someone walking through the receiving line and basically sharing with me how much she enjoyed and appreciated my message, and how she often felt that I was saying something so important that she just couldn't miss a time, couldn't miss a moment when I would be sharing the lesson. And then she finally acknowledged towards the end of all of her praise and acclamation that she only wished that she could understand what I was talking about. And it sort of reminded me of a possible pattern that I'm experiencing, because I was gone last week, as many of you know. I was in Sacramento, California. I was speaking at the Spiritual Life Center, Michael Moran's former church. And they've just, under James Trapp, our former president and CEO of International Association of Unity Churches, is now a senior minister there. And so he decided to have me come they're engaging now in my coaching program. But anyway, the message that I wanted to share is that after the first service, I basically gave the talk that I gave about a month ago when I talked about the new funding model for mission-centric ministry. Maybe some of you will remember that. So I gave that talk, and after the first service, this lady came up to me. She's about this tall, and she was a little bit older. And she comes up to me, and it's like this. And she says, you use too big of words, and you take a long time to make your point. Okay? And then she concluded by saying, and it was a beautiful talk. Anyway, so it's come to my awareness that from time to time, there's an occasion for me to wander into an area where how I'm describing the experience that I'm trying to describe is sometimes leaves people wanting more clarity, more information. So I looked into that kind of phenomenon, and I'm wanting to explain what's really going on, because I'm now understanding what's happening with me. I mentioned a couple weeks ago, when I talked about ownership, that part of my journey was to own what was unfolding in me in the last several years, and that is to own the gift that I have received as a part of my healing journey, and that is that I have been gifted by being able to receive conveyances, revelations, insights from the field, or whatever we call this other dimension, from which, for those of you who are artists or musicians or healers, you already know that your gift comes from another dimension, another place, and you're simply a channel or an instrument. And so all I'm saying is that I'm just now coming to acknowledge the gift that I have that is, in a sense, an opportunity for me to be a conveyor of something that is seeking to be brought forth from the other side, that is here to help accelerate our transformational journey. And so what happens is that I receive these complete downloads from time to time. And so I feel uncomfortable talking about what I'm receiving in the context of channeling, or, you know, I'm getting something from the other side, because it's too foreign for me, and I'm not used to that. Although I'm sure it's comfortable, and you're used to that sort of thing, given the diversity of our community and all the people that are here. That's probably your normal. For me, I have to kind of wear it around a little bit before I feel comfortable. So from now on, I'm just going to say, from time to time, I get these faxes. Okay, so that's going to be code. That'll be code for you, that I've gotten some kind of conveyance from the other side, And so my effort is that when I receive something, I have to talk about it. And in the early part of my able to try to sort out what it is that I'm receiving, it's not going to sound very coherent because I'm still trying to make sense of it myself. When I receive these things, these are absolutely 100% complete downloads of entire processes. For instance, the Q process came this way. Okay? And it just so happened, though, in order for it to actually be usable, it had to go to Jane and my other business partner to be interpreted and and brought into any kind of usable form. And that's how my journey has been the last 18 years, is that I would receive things, and then I would be in the struggle to figure out what it was that I received and then try it on by conveying it to my audiences. And 18 years ago, I didn't have a church where I had a congregation every Sunday to do this with. And so I would go to different churches, and I'd just do the same talk over and over and over and over again until I got it right. But now being in a kind of relationship with a community, I can't every Sunday kind of try it again. Okay, this is my third try for what I'm about to share. And hopefully it'll be clear enough for you to be able to take it with you and have it mean something. So with that said, the Q process, the integral model of ministry where I got my doctoral degree on, the mission-centric model of ministry, conscious conversations, the new funding model, the integral membership system, all of the things that we're doing has been faxed to me. And the effort that you've kind of been kind of subjected to in terms of my trying to wander around and talk about what's happening and make it sound like something coherent and plausible and executable. So you're kind of, you provide me with the opportunity for me to be able to share it, and then this and then it either lands or it doesn't, and then my effort is to clean it up after I see how it lives. So it worked okay in the first service. That's all I got to report so far. So this is one of those experiences where I receive something that I have to convey it, otherwise I lose it. Just like any of you, if you're a writer or a poet, you have to write it down, otherwise you forget it. And so I'm the very same way. I receive things, and if I don't talk about it, convey it. That's why I'm doing all these videos now, is because I receive something and I have a camera. If you go to our house in our living room, we have everything set up because in a moment I'll get something, I have to sit in front of it and start speaking into it to capture it, because that's what's going on. And this is one of those moments. I just don't have a video camera yet, and when we're live streaming one of these days, we'll capture them all. So you need to have one of these in your possession in order to make sense of what's going to happen next. So if you don't have one, right here, Alan, up here. Raise your hand. As these are coming around, over here, Alan, you can still have, you have more people. More people. So all you people have raised your hands, you probably walked in here without a bulletin. So that tells us that we have something not working in our system correctly. So this is good information. So Diane, you're going to have to, there's some folks over there, and I know you're slow with your get-along, but we're going to wait until everybody has one of those. All right, good. Okay. So I'm in my professor mode now. You know, Jay and I teach ministers, we teach colleagues, we teach leaders, and so this is my way of bringing you into the use of a tool that will hopefully help you amplify your transformational journey. So we talk a lot about the foundation principles here in Unity, such as there's one presence, one power, there's just God. our second foundation principle is that if there's just God, that means we're children of God. And then our third principle is that we create our personal reality through the thoughts that we think, the beliefs that we hold, and our habits of being. In other words, how we be with what we're having. And we say this often, and most everyone says, yes, I agree with that. We can all agree in principle that there is a relationship between the thoughts that we think and the beliefs that we hold and our habits of being that help create the quality of our life experience, the felt sense of what we're having. In other words, if our life feels good, then there's something that we're doing that creates that good feeling. If our life doesn't feel so good, there's something that we're doing to create that experience, as opposed to believing that it's happening to us. In other words, we believe in unity that we're creating our experience. Our personal reality is an effect of a creative process, and what we're suggesting is that this cascade contributes to that process. And we only identify three things, but I'm here to tell you that there's eight things that we need to be aware of that contribute to how we co-create our experience. And it's important that we understand what it is that we do that produces our reality, because there's nobody going to change it otherwise, unless it's us. And so we need to look at this phenomenon because it's important. Now, when we look at this cascade, we need to understand that this takes place in the context of what could be described as a body-mind process. That's why we have a picture of a brain and a silhouette of a person. So in other words, the whole circuitry of how we create our reality is in part embedded in who we are as a corporeal being. In other words, we have a body-mind. And as we look at the component parts of what creates our reality, we need to understand that these component parts live in us as circuitry, as neurological circuitry, as a biological environment. In other words, there's chemistry with every thought and with every feeling. And there's dynamics that are present in terms of our body-mind phenomenon. That means that it's just hard to step out of a way of being because our body is used to it. So when it's used to being a certain way, it's hard for it to just change and be a different way. However, on some level, the body is always changing. As a matter of fact, you have an absolutely totally different body than you had a year ago. Everything in it's changed. It's different. Now, you're not so different because there is a phenomenon within the body-mind process that basically reboots up the same self system moment after moment after moment. And if we don't understand the mechanism that replicates our self, and if we are wanting a better experience in our life, then we have to work within the phenomenon of body-mind and in the context of that circuitry that creates our personal reality. Okay, with that said, as we look at the dynamic of the cascade, in other words, all the component parts that comprise the dynamics that represent how what we are becomes what we have and what we do, then we are being able to see a relationship with all of these different component parts. Now, this is an oversimplification of the circuitry, but as you can see, as you look at it, you can probably notice all these parts that are participating in how you experience what you're having in any given moment. In other words, there's a sensing dimension of your being that basically is on the lookout for any kind of threat or kind of concern. So we are hardwired to look out at our life and make sure that we're safe and okay. In other words, we're already hypersensitive to how our life looks and feels outside of us. And this is a problem because when we're so sensitive to how our life looks and feels, then we're very easily set off And then when we're set off, this cascade runs while we're unconscious. And then we're sort of lost in this kind of behavioral trap. So I'm wanting you all to look at what you have in your hand. And I want you to the best of your ability, to turn to someone and explain it to them. Go, you have 2 minutes. There's a woman behind me. Okay, that's about all the time I have. All right, bring your attention back. Thank your partner. Come on back. I lost it. I lost control. I can see that. All right. Bring your attention back. That's right. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Very good. All right, as soon as Reverend Dr. Jane comes back to her seat. All right, so as you interact with this, it's important for us to acknowledge that under normal circumstances, we're not conscious of this dynamic, this process. In other words, we pay attention to how our life looks and feels, but that doesn't include all of the circuits with respect to how our reality gets made. So some of the things that go unnoticed are our stories. What are the stories you're telling people? Are you telling stories that you're a victim? Or are you telling stories that you're more than enough? So we have stories running in our head that basically create our own kind of internal virtual reality. And so independent of any kind of intervention, we're going to be left to our own devices, you see. And therefore, we should consider the possibility that most of our discomfort is self-inflicted. We should consider this possibility. And as you look at this, this cascade, we will see that until we awaken within the system, we are basically modulated by the world system. And that is illustrated in this next slide as we understand that if with the backdrop of this cascade, this way in which our reality gets generated is in the context of a story of separation, then what happens in this context is that we become manifested in the habits that are the unintended consequences of this story of separation. And those habits are scarcity, a sense of not enough, a sense of judgment or otherizing. You know what otherizing means? or a sense of struggle, a sense that we're outsourcing our discomfort, in other words. We're making our discomfort out there as well as our well-being outside of ourselves. And all of these tendencies are an effect of this cascade being unconscious to us, embedded in the story of separation. And until we create a different context for this cascade, it will run us and fulfill itself in the context of limitation, in the context of other, in the context of life being against us. And that's not the truth. It's just a phenomenon that gets created when we're unconscious. And when, as researchers have told us, when 75% of our behavior is basically unconscious and basically an effect of this process, then it's no wonder why we find ourselves living by the hormones of stress most of our time. And therefore, compelled to kind of seek relief in ways that don't necessarily move us forward. Our relief is in terms of numbing ourselves out or separating ourselves from the conditions that seem to be the source unto us. And so we have to address this phenomenon because nobody else is. And if we don't, then our world isn't going to transform. But once we understand the circuitry behind our manifest reality, we can intervene. We can work with this system. So I'm going to run you through a scenario just to help you see how this circuitry works. But you must interact with this yourself consciously. You must take this home and you must observe how this system runs you. And if you do this, if you notice, if you see how this runs, that's the first step of intervention. You cannot intervene until you see your self system and as it generates your current states. And when you see all of these component parts at work and them kind of building upon each other and the kind of feedback loop we find ourselves, we will see that the intervention is not only needed, it is absolutely necessary for our survival. Okay, so let's run through a scenario that happens when we're unconscious, not aware. So there's a part of us that's out there sensing. This part of us, the circuit in our brain called the amygdala, it would rather be wrong 99% of the time than miss the one time it failed to protect us. And so consequently, it's going to be looking out and it's going to be guessing. You're against me, you're against me, you're against me, you're against me, maybe you're against me, I don't know, maybe you're against me. But the point is that there's a dimension of our being, because of primitive times, we're hardwired to think lions and tigers and bears, oh my. But we don't have to do that nowadays, but the circuitry is still there. So let's just say we're picking up on a sense of lack. That becomes the seed that's planted, and let's watch the circuit work with this. So if I'm sensing some kind of lack, how does that inform my thought processes? So maybe my thought process is going to be moving into otherizings, looking at the people that have stuff that I don't. I'm going to compare myself with those who are better off. I live in this whole dynamic of aligning with some external standard of who I'm supposed to be in order for me to have any clue as to my worth. This is the standard that we're compelled to when we live in this system and it's running us unconsciously. Then we have to do something. Typically, when we're in some kind of sense of not enough, our doing is all about getting more, because that's the only way that we can resolve our not enough, it seems. But that's just the nature of the circuit. And then therefore, because it has to come outside of ourselves, then we have to force it, we have to coax it, we have to manipulate, we have to control. We have to do all the kinds of behaviors that we witness in the world today because of not enough. And that has a consequence to it. And that struggle creates a felt sense of some belief that we have about ourselves, so it can land on us in terms of, for me, my favorite one is being a disappointment. And when we have a felt sense that we're not okay or not safe, that creates a reinforcement of whatever belief is in there. And then that belief reinforces the stories that we tell. My life is hard. My life is against me. I'm a victim. I have all these things that aren't happening. It's supposed to come to me. Why isn't it not happening? And then we reinforce those habits of being. And that's what happens. Okay, there's $100 right there, sacred sound. It's a fax, right? All right, well, it should be priceless then. All right, so I've got to move this on because, so here's the other side of it. So here's the other side of the whole thing. The moment that we extricate this cascade, this phenomenon, all these circuits, out of the story of separation and into the story of interbeing, the whole phenomenon shifts. That's what we don't realize. But you see, we can't go in just a little bit. I just can't go in and start telling a different story and not take ownership of how I'm being with what's going on. I just can't complain about what's happening and make somebody else the matter with me without me coming to terms with my own disconnect, where I'm not living in integrity with respect to who I am. And so the moment that we shift out of the context of separation into the context of inner being, then there's a cognitive dissonance that begins to happen in our consciousness. That if we're all interconnected, I can't get away with my sense of not enough anymore. It's out of integrity. I can't be compelled to get more. It's out of integrity. Something has to shift if I'm going to align this circuitry, this body mind, with the principle of my interconnection and interdependency with the totality of what is life, unless I find harbor and safety and sanctuary in that principle, then I am run by this system unconsciously. Finally, the last thing I'm going to... This is not the last slide. Let's see. Hang on a second. Okay, two more slides. So this is just a reiteration. So if we place this context, this circuitry, in the context of our interconnection, there is a different dynamic. In other words, your self system still runs exactly the same way. It still runs in terms of manifesting the reality the same way. It's just the context is different. The context is in alignment with principle. And so your life's experience is going to be transformed. However, if our circuitry is embedded in a world that is in chaos and separation, we become modulated to that, and then we become driven by it. So the last thing, here's the last slide. It's from the Gospel of Thomas, and it's, I think, verse 70, and it's where Jesus is quoted to say this. He says, "If you bring forth that which is within you, what is within you will save you. If you do not bring forth that which is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you." And so this is what it means to me. As I look out at the world, especially in terms of the chaos, the disruption, the disorder, the divisiveness, the division, what I am seeing is what is the unintended consequence of what happens when our human family does not bring forth that which is within us. And so what we are seeing is what happens when we fail to really own the totality of who we are, including our shadow, and don't make somebody else responsible for taking care of us, but to own who we are and then get the support that we need to move this whole thing that we are into this dimension of interbeing where all of us can become agents of transformation. So the question is, are you still on the transformation team? All right, because you need to learn that circuit. Learn that circuit. Learn the reality cascade, and that'll accelerate your transformational journey. Thank you.
I'm sensing oneness.